This week on Fanboy Versus, we talk about DC delayed digital discounts, and Marvel brings us Mighty Avengers. We also have the top five need-to-read books of the week, including Gail Simone's second issue of The Movement, and The Replacements on Green Lantern. All this and the best book of the week on Fanboy Versus, featuring Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, special guest Matt Clark, and I'm your host, J.D. Church. Welcome to Fanboy Versus. How is everybody doing this week? I'd like to again mention that we are going through our rotating hosts. So as you heard, Matt is joining us this week. So thanks so much for being here, sir. Look at him. Look at him in his Plastic Man shirt. It's as though he is wearing Plastic Man.
It's like a second skin.
he's so close. So we asked this question. Where is our Plastic Man?
There needs to be a Plastic Man.
Now,
what's up with that?
Am I wrong? Was there not a rumor that Gail Simone was developing like a Plastic Man like graphic novel or something?
I don't know.
That was way back.
That was like a year and a half ago or something, I think.
The last thing I heard of Plastic Man was those animated shorts that weren't they going to be like turned into a series or something at one point, but it wound up becoming shorts or something.
The ones that Tom Kenny did.
That were like with Young Justice and Green Lantern and whatever they're playing now. I don't know what they're playing now.
They need to do a Booster Gold Plastic Man team up. That's what.
Yes.
I would go for that.
I would say yes.
The Bold, I think Plaz definitely has enough pull with the kids to get away with it.
Yeah.
Even for something more than shorts. I've just looked it up here, though, and apparently he was at least mentioned as one of the possible candidates to join the Justice League International for the New 52.
Mm.
You should have been able to tell us that, JD.
I should have, but, I didn't. But you know what I did read is I finally got a hold of that issue that Booster was in Jonah Hex.
All-Star West?
Yeah, the All-Star Western issue. And it was confusing as fuck. I read the whole issue and I was like, I have no idea what is going on. And Booster didn't seem to know either, which was not good.
I read the issue too, and I was assuming he must have appeared in the last couple of pages of the previous issue.
Maybe showed up at the end, but they explained.
Yeah.
What was so weird about it is like they explained up to the point. It's like they had him showing up where he didn't even know how he got there, and then they had him all throughout the issue, and then the issue didn't even like it just ended. Like, it literally went into the backup issue before I realized I was, like, into the backup issue.
That's pretty bad.
And I was like...
Yeah, I saw that, too. It's like, there's no the end next.
Yeah,
you know, there was... Not a very clear delineation.
Yeah, so, and I don't know if that... And maybe that's a... I haven't been reading the book, so I don't know if that's a... Like, that's the way the book works, and I just didn't know that, or what. But it was...
It probably is.
Yeah, it was very strange, and Matt is trying to make us, like, we're on a roller coaster or something. Sit still!
I'm trying to get comfy.
Sit still! Anyway, it was very jarring. It was not what, oh god. It was
It's not what you wanted out of your Booster goal.
No.
Something else.
No, especially since Booster spent the whole issue just being, like, Jonah's bitch.
Well, I mean, that was, you know, I think regardless of whether he had his memories or not, that is still the way that would have gone.
Yeah, kind of, but it was just, I don't know. I would have liked to...
The next part of that as well, and then we get a little bit more explanation, but Booster is just, he's just kind of lost in the past right now. That's just,
Is he staying? Is this like one-and-done story, or is he like staying basically as the primary cast?
It seems to be a story for a little bit. He's the sheriff. He was like he arrived and he took out a local troublemaker or who'd killed the sheriff or a local bent sheriff or whatever, and the townspeople made him the sheriff of this town. You know, so,
It's sort of like that Doctor Who episode. Where
Yeah. I was waiting for Stetsons are cool. The hat.
Yeah. Oh, and it's totally Booster and a Duster and a Stetson. It's yeah. You know.
Like, it's not wearing like a cowboy outfit or anything.
He is literally Booster with. I'm serious. Like, imagine him in like the trench coat, duster thing, and a cowboy hat, but the rest of it's all the Booster Gold stuff.
Oh boy!
Like, that's totally and a badge.
And I bet Jonah Hicks is like, "You ain't from around here."
No, I think he referred to him as. That may have been an actual line followed by looking something like a rodeo clown. I think was in there as well. Although the great part is when Booster actually remembered who he was and like went through his history, and I thought Jonah was gonna gut him, because you know it was really weird. But like I said, the first issue was okay. Is the second issue of that out? Is the next issue?
Yeah.
It is.
Would have been issue 20, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I need to grab. I guess I should grab the next issue if he's still gonna be in it. Hopefully, Booster's getting his own book soon, which is something we've been talking about.
A rumor.
But we just don't have. It's a rumor, but we don't have any creative teams or anything yet for it. So
Ray and Palmer.
Dan Jurgens. What? Yeah.
I would love to.
I have no ill will against Dan Jurgens whatsoever, but he is like literally the last person I want doing it.
Yeah, it is a little. I guess I can see where it's like my thing with Dan Jurgens and Booster Gold is probably sort of like how I complain at you guys, or mostly Triplett, about. Putting Slott back on a She-Hulk book.
Dan Slott wrote She-Hulk for all of like 18 issues. There's no harm in more Dan Slott She-Hulk.
No.
Dan Jurgens has been writing Booster Gold for friggin' 20 years.
Exactly.
It's his baby.
We're not sick to death of Dan Slott She-Hulk. In fact, we could do for just a little bit more.
I broadly, essentially tolerated Dan Jurgens' Booster Gold off the back of Geoff Johns' fantastic Booster Gold for 2 years, and I want something. And I'm wondering if Gray and Palmiotti might be going to take it over again. They're doing Booster in All Star Western.
Yeah,
maybe.
I don't know. We'll see.
Good thought.
Bring it.
Should be interesting. So, speaking of things in comics, what is it? What is the news?
The news. Week? Well, let's stick with DC, and we'll start with the smaller piece of news. Which is that DC have shifted the pricing window on their Comixology app on the prices of their comics on DC on their DC.
It's not a riddle.
It's I know. I'm like, did
yeah. So it used to be that DC Comics would drop in price by $1 on the Comixology app after a month, but now it's 2 months. Change that.
And in totally stealth, too, because they didn't even...
Yeah, it just happened.
It just, like, people... It was... I think the way I heard the report is that people were, like, going in, they knew the day the price was supposed to drop, they went in to download it, the price didn't drop, they called tech support, said, hey, Comixology, by the way, you know, the price is supposed to go down on this, and they checked on it, like, oh, no, it's going to be another 4 weeks. Yeah, so there was like no kind of announcement or any kind of a news bit on it whatsoever. It was just sort of a stealth delay on the price drop. I mean, the price still drops; it's just a little bit longer. And I don't wonder. I wonder if this was like a financial move, or if this is something out of, you know, there's so many books. There's a couple of books now that they've had that have had reprints, like the Robin issue of. Ink and maybe one other, but do you think maybe it's something to do with that? Like, you know, if they're having reprints or something, that it's sort of killing.
I don't know.
You know, the reprint or something.
What was like the standard drop of like other stuff? Because like IDW would drop stuff after a while. Was it a month or was it 2 months? Maybe they're hitting the standard where like if everybody else was doing 2 months, maybe they're staying in line with that. Maybe that's why they did it. I don't know. I just know Marvel never drops their stuff. They got stuff from like 2 years ago on Comixology.
No.
It's still $4.
No.
That's because Marvel will do this thing every Monday of saying, hey, 99-cent sale, get them while you can. So while they're doing that and people go off and say, hell yeah, and grabs them all, they know the ones who are winner.
Yeah, and
like Steam.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's honestly, I don't mind that so bad because that's like, you know what the prices are going to be normally. They're going to be whatever. I mean, your price isn't going to drop on the issues that you're buying at your comic shop unless they have a sale. So why not leave the prices the same? It's something DC did to try to be competitive. And it's probably not working, I would assume.
And it was also probably because like this was a new thing that they were doing. It's not so new now. Now it's
and now that
accepted.
And it's not like they made a news story out of it. So they just sort of stealth, delayed the price drop.
It's like
because
people are buying
these absolutely. This is unfortunately this is DC's current attitude. And I try not to turn this into another let's rip on DC fest because we're doing those a lot lately. But Christ, there's nothing else. There's so little else to talk about with the company. This is DC's current attitude. Don't talk about it. Don't address the problem. Don't act like there's no problem.
Right.
It's like when they shut down their Breverton Chase column at CBR because people asked them questions that they didn't want to have to answer. And it's the same here. It's like there's absolutely no positive spin. Personally, for me, I don't care. People whining about it, to me, are just the kinds of people who put inherently less value on digital media, even though there's no difference aside from the presence, the physicality of an item or not, as far as comics go. So whatever, I don't care. Not a big digital spoiler anyway.
I didn't even notice. Like, the comics that I have this week were digital. I bought a digital copy of Movement Number 2.
There's no positive spin to put it on. There's no positive response anybody will ever have to it. So what did DC do? They just do it quietly and don't address it.
Right. Which I can't say is a bad move. I mean, I know that ended up as like
maybe it's not an actively bad move, but it's not a good move. It's a zero move at best. that it is a move that reflects badly on the company by not being taken.
Yeah.
Well, can I ask you a quick question? Are they still doing those physical copies with digital codes, or have they stopped doing that?
I haven't
DC
seen those.
Do them, but
I haven't seen them in a while.
Marvel do them, as we all know. They're three.
Yeah,
they're,
but
they're,
I mean,
they're,
like,
this
was specifically for Comixology codes. That's the ones I was talking about. And they were like,
well, I don't know. I mean, they do still put out their combo packs, but you pay $5 for them.
Oh.
I never see them.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's DC's. It's only a few things, and they come polybagged and everything. It's over the top. Yeah,
I never see them. That's
they
why
charge.
They're still doing them or not, because nobody ever has them.
They charge $5 for the combo packs with the digital copies on them, whereas Marvel just puts the codes in with all their $4. All Marvel's $4 books have the digital code included.
You know, that's an interesting thing, again, that approach, where it's like, DC will give you the digital copy, but you have to spend more to get the combo pack. Whereas not only is Marvel including a digital copy with their books, but they have this laissez-faire approach when it comes to sharing codes.
The
creators are out there actively encouraging you to give your code away to other people to read the book.
It probably helps you that the digital experience is actually a lot better in Comixology than the Marvel app, because the Marvel app is pretty terrible.
But that's the brilliant thing where Marvel did, though, where it's like it's a crossover. If you add your Marvel account to your crossover to your Comixology account, you get it on both. So
it also works that Marvel seems to be a lot more in touch with the whole multimedia platform than DC, because you got their AR thing going on, and you got their access to the like videos and little mini short comics, and it just seems to me that they seem to be more on the pulse on what's going on out there in the terms of computers and online than any other company I know at the moment. Of course, I'm probably just talking out my butt, but it just seems that they seem to be a lot more on the pulse.
Well, I think they're at least providing the option.
Maybe not even just technology. I think they're just more in sync with their audience. Marvel, have all these... I can't really comment, because it's entirely dependent on who I follow, so I'll never mind Twitter. But you look at Tumblr, and all these Tumblr followings that you hear for books like...
Journey into Mystery or Captain Marvel or things like that, or Young Avengers, these books that are inspiring these kinds of followings. What Marvel's got letters pages, DC don't, you know?
Yeah.
And DC just seem very, very out of touch with their audience because ire seems to result from any attempted interactions.
Yeah.
And more to the point, letters pages... If anybody has ever read the letters pages to places like Superior Spider-Man, oh my lord, is that entertaining.
Marvel aren't afraid to put negative letters in there, yeah, too. That's the sort of thing that right now DC would just totally...
Oh, they would ignore it. It would all be...
Completely. Yeah. But yeah. Marvel, I mean, to be fair, I mean... When these things happen for Marvel, it's usually only at the start of series. It's like Avengers Arena is another one as well. Like, that's an odd book. You wouldn't think that would have a letters page, but it stirred up enough emotion in people to get letters written in. And there were lots and lots of negative letters for that book whenever it kicked off that were published. But as time has gone on, the positive responses to the book have outweighed the negative ones. And remember when Miles Morales was introduced and the amount of negative letters or the the whole gay issue in Avengers Academy as well. The whole dialogues that were going on between various letter writers and the editors internal to the letters page. You know, I mean, there's not a lot of Marvel comics up letters pages, and they're nearly all confined to the Whacker office. Spidey's got them. Captain Marvel's got them.
I love Walking Dead's letters page because, like, when somebody dies. Jesus, you get three pages of letters of people being like, God, why did you kill Dale?
Pages too, because you get great letters pages with Saga.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And 5 pages long, and it's one of those things. Because I mean, it's because it doesn't always happen with the Marvel books. It does with Avengers Academy. It is actually the writer who's answering the letters.
Yeah.
It's the same with Walking Dead and with Saga, where it is Kirkman and Brian K. Vaughan who are responding to the letters, and you do feel like you're really reaching them, you know. And DC, no.
Yeah, none.
But do you remember when they tried to bring letters pages back for like 5 seconds?
No.
And it was just a uniform letters page that was published across the line in those 2 pages where they, you know, where they used the first they used them for a promotion of other comics, and then they tried to turn it into a letters page, and then they just went away quietly without being addressed.
Well, there's probably
is Channel 52 basically their letters page now? I mean, is that what that's supposed to be? Taking the place of or something?
Yeah, which sadly seems to me like, you know, that's the propaganda from the state. You know, yeah. Like talking about how great things are. Things are wonderful here in DC Universe.
Oh. Look, there's Ambush Bug. You guys love Ambush Bug, don't you?
All right. Well, we will stop kicking poor DC. What else do we have in the news?
We have a segment called Kicking DC.
God, we could do that. We could do that at some point.
DC done something stupid this week. Actually, yeah. Let me just go in. 1 second, guys, for this week.
Well, that's, I think it, on the site it was the Comixology news. I just checked it for the...
Yeah, it's been 4 days.
4 days, kids.
Prior to that, it was...
I'm trying to remember. I just looked at this for the show.
See, that's the thing is, like, the artists can be a little vindictive and they pick things that really aren't.
Like the Batman thing? Is that what that is? Yeah.
That the same image of Batman chained up has been used as a piece of background art for a series of themed covers
for the Villains Month, I think. Yeah.
That'll be the next piece of news.
So it's like, well, I mean, they only have like 18 Batman books, you know, I don't blame them for like using the same art in the background of those. Although what they did was pretty funny because then they took some classic art and just added in the Batman chained up to it. So it was like the Mona Lisa with a little chained up Batman in the back, and then like the Sunday in the park and with the Batman. Pretty great.
Sounds all right.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. But not, I wouldn't say that was like a stupid
with
thing.
Batman. No, I don't think it counts for the purposes of this sort of thing. But that, you know, the outhouse are
a little, they're a little mad
a little
right
vindictive,
now.
Yeah,
a little bitter.
Well, you know, that's a good lead in then to talk about the other thing, which has been rumbled for a while now, but we have the full solicits for it. This is it is the month of September. Yes, it's for September. DC is doing Villains Month.
Yep.
Now, this is important to understand because this is the whole DC publishing thing is upheaved for 1 month. There are multiple books that will not be published in the month, and multiple books that will increase their publication schedule, taking a leaf out of Marvel's book with the point system. So each different issue is a spotlight on a villain. I'll just run through them here, simple as quickly as I can. I mean, it's not, and the issues are not by the regular writing team or anything like that.
Wow.
It's really just all over the place. It's going to make retailers ordering these things a tremendous pain in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how you're going to do that.
Yeah, because it's highly unlikely that people buying Justice League will want Justice League 23.1 Darkseid by Greg Pak, Justice League 23.2 by starring Lobo by Marguerite Bennett, or Justice League 23.3 Dial E, written by China Mieville. Right, that's Dial H. Why aren't you publishing that as Dial H number 16?
Because so they're actually going point. They're saying point one, point
right,
two.
And these
that
are,
wow, yep. Okay.
And these are supposed to be villain stories, I would guess, then.
Yeah. Dial E for evil, I
right.
guess. I mean,
yes.
It doesn't
right.
Yeah, well, this is, it is like, you can't stop dialing. In a special Villains Month coda to the fan-favorite Dial H series, a lost E-dial is discovered by four young criminals on the run in Louisville. But who is chasing them, and will they figure out how to control this nefarious dial before it's too late? Hindsight is 20/20 when you're sprinting through dark alleys. Featuring 20 new villains, 20 pages of creative insanity, and 20 top artists each drawing a page of the action.
Oh.
That sounds fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, but that's an issue of Dial H.
Yeah, it's basically, yeah. But that sounds awesome. That sounds like the first issue of Dial H, but with yeah. villains. I mean, that sounds great.
Yeah. But not every customer who buys Justice League, the hundreds of times more, the dozens more people who buy Justice League than buy Dial H, are not going to want that. So, you know. But anyway, the rest of them are Justice League 23.4, The Secret Society. Then there are four issues of Justice League of America published, focusing on Deadshot, Killer Frost, Shadow Thief, and Black Adam. There are two issues... Sorry, there's Green Arrow is focusing on Count Vertigo. There are two issues of Aquaman, focusing on Black Manta and Ocean Master. There are two issues of Flash, focusing on Grodd and the Reverse... Sorry, three issues of Flash, the Grodd, the Reverse Flash, and the Rogues. There are two Earth 2s, focusing on Desaad and Solomon Grundy. There are... sorry, I got to go through this list manually here. There are two Wonder Womans, focusing on Cheetah and Firstborn. One, two, three, four Action Comics. Zod, Luthor...
My God.
Zod, Luthor, Mallow, and Cyborg Superman. Four Supermans, focusing on Bizarro, Brainiac, Hell, and Parasite.
Jesus, so you're saying I'm going to get like eight issues of Superman that month? Is that what it is?
Let me just run through that.
I mean, if this is, you know, any indication here, like what we're telling you is that if you have a pull box at your shop, what you need to do for any of your DC issues is you need to have a conversation with your shop and make sure that the things you're getting pulled for September are the stuff that you want.
For instance... I imagine that Superman 23.1 Bizarro by Sholey Fish will probably be quite good.
Yeah,
the Bizarro one looks good.
I doubt that Superman 23.3 Hail by Scott Lobdell will be.
Even though he's the primary writer on that.
Whoa!
Yeah, there's Superman Batman is dealing with Doomsday. Batman, there are four Batmans. And they are dealing with Joker, Riddler, Penguin, and Bane. There are four Detective Comics, Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, Scarecrow, and Man-Bat. There are four Dark Knights, starring Ventriloquist, Mr. Freeze, Clayface, and the Joker's daughter. There are four Batman and Robins, Two-Face, the Court of Owls, Ra's al Ghul, and the League of Assassins, and Killer Croc. There are four Green Lanterns, focusing on Relic, Mongol, Blackhand, and Sinestro. There are two, sorry, just wait, hang on. No, those are just backwards. Two Justice League Darks, Eclipso and the Creeper. Arcane is the focus of Swamp Thing. Trigon and Deathstroke in the two Titans issues. And I believe that is everything. In addition to the first issue of the Forever Evil miniseries, which is coming out this month, which is a short.
You are damned if you are a Batman fan.
So wait a minute. So how many issues then is DC putting out in that month?
I believe it comes to about 56.
Not 52?
No, it's all over.
But that also means that then your regular books for that month, your regular DC books are skipping for that month, basically.
Looks like it.
You know, so any of the other stuff that you are reading is going to be, yeah. So, I mean, that's all I can tell you, folks, is that seriously, if you have a pull box at your comic shop, you know, next week when you go get your books, please have a conversation, you know, with whoever's there and make sure that you get your pull for that particular month straightened out.
Okay, I've just counted that. There are actually 52 of these point issues being published.
But they don't all pertain to your stuff. Like, if you're reading All-Star Western, you know what I mean?
No,
like
there's no direct correlation at all.
So what is that going to do?
Which just goes to show you, DC, and again, we said this last week, DC is more concerned about the number 52 than they are about what they're actually putting out to fill those numbers.
Well, and that's the other thing, too. Like, this has got to be the hugest just FU to the shops. I mean,
I know
what,
it's a tremendous pain in the ass. For
well, I don't know what you guys are going to do. I mean, this is insane.
Are there some shops that probably won't order any of them? They'll be like, yeah, these won't sell.
Well, how do you... But, I mean, but literally, it's almost like you're going to have to set aside a separate pull for DC for your customers for that month. Like, you're going to have to... Like, my shop usually does about every 3 months. Like, they need a new pull list, you know. But you're going to have to come up with a separate DC pull just for that month, you know, for your customers. And what do you do for your customers that maybe only come in once a month or something? It's just like, ugh.
I mean, there'll be customers who will find themselves, potentially customers who will find themselves with absolutely nothing that month.
Well, they'll either find themselves with nothing, but I'm more concerned about the customers that are going to have, you know, pull boxes full of stuff that they don't want. Yeah. And then what are the retailers going to do? I mean, you know.
ML Pony in the chat has also just reminded me of another problem, a little grumble that came up as a result of this. J.H. Williams has spent quite a while, I don't think they named any names, but I think it's pretty obvious they were talking about Killer Croc. He's been building to something with Killer Croc in Batwoman since the New 52 started, because Killer Croc's been one of the villains in the cast of Batwoman, and that has been whipped away from him, cut out from under him, and given to somebody else for this Killer Croc villain issue.
Jeez.
Oh. Has DC done something stupid this week?
I think this is it. I mean, why is this not on the list? Like, the Comixology thing is minor compared to this.
I like the name Kicking DC. I think we should keep it.
Kick them while they're down.
We want to like DC. We like their characters. We like most of their writers.
Can we like record a show that takes place like 10 years ago, and we can be talking about how awesome DC was? Because I was like loving me some DC like 10 years ago.
Man, even
I'm really sad that my interest in DC has. I mean, I can credit Infinite Crisis with finally getting me to read DC comics literally for the first time. I didn't give the universe any attention whatsoever outside of cartoons before Infinite Crisis came along. And that was followed up with things like 52 and Jones's Booster Gold and Jones's Superman and just all and tons of other things I couldn't even name off the top of my head. Jones's Justice Society, Meltzer's Justice League, just lots of good things that kept me interested and reading the books, you know, but my interests have plunged to pre-2005 levels at this stage. This amount of shit that they're pulling. Like, once the Shazam thing is over in Justice League this month, that's me. I'm done with Justice League. I'm not even sticking around for Trinity War. I have no goodwill left in me for Trinity War anymore. Dial H is ending. I'm willing to give Superman Unchained, which comes out next week, by the way, so we'll be talking about that next week.
When is Batman Superman? Is that this month as well?
Following week. Yeah, that is also this. I'm willing to give Superman Unchained the benefit of the doubt because Scott Snyder is one of the few writers still working at DC who seems to actually be in control of his own stories.
Yeah.
Yep. But
that'll be me. And Aquaman is teetering on the edge because every time I think it's about to fall in, it pulls back with a little something interesting. But
no,
I mean, yeah, anyway, like, let's talk about a new Marvel book.
I'm sorry. Well, Matt, did you say you had something you wanted to add? Or...
Sorry, Matt.
Well,
sorry.
I'm just gonna just coming into this as somebody that attempted to give DC a go with the new 52. I went from a pull list of 10 comics at the beginning of the new 52, and it got gradually chipped away and chipped away and chipped away. And not even Batman. I don't get Batman when it first gets released. I get it when it gets collected by Titan Comics over in the UK because it's far cheaper for me. The main ones I still get was Dial H.
Gone.
And Swamp Thing, which I don't even get full on all the time. I get trades of two comics, chaps. Dial H is going, so that leaves me with one.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, that Swamp Thing book might be good now. I just haven't read it.
Yeah, it could be. I just
not slapping it. Yeah. I mean, Snipe finished his story, and
I would say the Swamp Thing book is probably one of DC's best books still. Because really, can there be much worse than some of their other stuff? I mean, there really can't.
No. Okay, I'm sorry, Christopher Feely. What do you got then?
Marvel did announce a new series this week.
Ooh. Oh,
all right.
Yes. Oh. It's a title that it probably shouldn't have, but I know why it has it.
Okay.
It is launching in the mouth of infinity. Mighty Avengers is back.
Oh yeah, I did see this story.
Now this really should be Heroes for Hire,
mm-hmm.
but it's not because every time they've tried to launch a new series called Heroes for Hire in the last couple of years. Fallen on its ass.
But if you put Avengers on it,
Avengers is a bankable name. It is going to be. It's a real. It, first of all, it's like Mighty Avengers should be Heroes War. Oh yeah, good writer. I mean, okay, Al Ewing is doing the writing. I've never read anything by Al Ewing, but I hear a lot of. I've heard a lot of good things about him. He did Zosser of Zilk for 2008 over here. He's a novelist as well. He did the two issues of Avengers Assemble, which tied into Age of Ultron. You know, the ones I actively skipped because I wasn't buying tie-ins that weren't written by the regular series writer. Yeah. Only to discover in the case of Avengers Assemble that those were just the Avengers Assemble issues for that month. Right. They were 14 and 15 AU, but there were no normal 14 and 15. The writer is good, from what I understand. Unfortunately, Greg Land is drawing.
Oh no!
But then on
you
the plus
spoiled
side,
this.
On the plus side, that means he must be leaving Iron Man.
Yes!
Yay! Now,
there's only so much land to go around, and then the cast of Mighty Avengers: Luke Cage, Falcon, that other Power Man, the Superior Spider-Man, She-Hulk, Black Marvel, White Tiger, a new Ronin, and Monica Rambeau, who is now going by the fantastic new codename of Spectrum.
Yeah.
Huh.
So,
So wait, there's going to be two Power Men.
There are.
Luke Cage and Power Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Luke Cage has dropped the Power Man name, basically, and...
Can they call the other guy, like, Little Cage or something? Like, you know?
I forget what his real name is.
Yeah, I don't remember that kid. He was in a team up book for a little while with.
He was introduced during Shadowland. He put in a few guest appearances in the backup strips in Spidey.
Yeah.
And he did the. He and Iron Fist had the. You remember Poker Face? That was him. He and the guy with the poker through his face. He and Iron Fist. That was him. Iron Fist and Power Man. That was him.
Right.
And it's Falcon, the new White Tiger, who we know mainly from. The Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, but who is, you know, from the pages of Avengers Academy.
Right.
We don't know who the new Ronin is, I don't think. And then Blue Marvel is the weird one, but...
Well, I'm interested by, and I know, I'm sure you're about to go there, though, the concept behind this book and the seeming change of heart that Tom Brevoort has undergone.
Yeah,
I mean,
let's not mince it. This is the Black Avengers.
Yes, exactly.
Spider-Man and plus Spider-Man and She-Hulk, and because
Spider-Man said Spider-Man has said he's black before.
Yeah, so. Spider-Man could be black. He's got a costume on shit too.
Black costume, not.
Remember, Jameson hates him because he's black. That was.
I mean, White Tiger is Latina, and
We don't know who's under the Ronin mask. So, but yeah, aside from White Tiger, Spidey, and She-Hulk, everyone's black. Everyone's African American. So, hooray! I guess.
I don't
want to be that guy or anything. But
yeah. here's what I love about this though. Not 2 years ago, Tom Brevoort was poo-pooing the idea of specifically putting together, you know, a book with, you know, like a specific sort of multicultural mix. And so then now here 2 years later, they're doing this Mighty Avengers book, and it's like, and there's like a quote from him that I read, which I absolutely thought was interesting because, he invokes, crap, why can't it? I hate when I do this. The name. Static Shock. Yes.
Dwayne McDuffie.
Oh, Dwayne McDuffie. Dwayne McDuffie. Sorry. Yeah. He specifically invokes Dwayne McDuffie and saying, like, you know, we thought of it as a book that, you know, Dwayne would appreciate, which I always see as kind of a dig to DC in a way, too, because, yeah, you know, he did so much work for DC, and then, you know, here's Marvel doing a book that they consider to be, you know, a Dwayne McDuffie homage. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting, though, from that perspective. I mean, I'm fine with it. The book, despite the fact that maybe it may be, you know, people are thinking about it as like this Black Avengers book, those are all great characters. I mean, this this is not a book filled with just people to fill spots. I mean, these are really good, interesting characters that I think will be interesting on a team. And, you know, certainly there hasn't been a solid place for Luke Cage since, you know, the Marvel Now switchover. So this is great.
I'm kind of surprised Luke Cage hasn't shown up at the X-Men yet, because Bendis loves him, and I just figured he'd show up as a teacher in, like, one of those comics. You know, well, I'm going to teach the X-Men for a while.
Well, and that is the thing. I mean, Bendis did so much work to really solidify Luke Cage as a great character.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just didn't have a place in the Marvel Now, and that was sort of the one... maybe one of the big missing elements out of it. And this sort of answers that question.
Yeah.
Even when they left Luke at the end of New Avengers, it sounded like that a Heroes for Hire team was coming soon.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I say this, I still feel like this should be Heroes for Hire.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's definitely, they seem to be trying to go for an urban Avengers type of thing. And I don't mean urban as in black. I mean, like, just like street level.
Street level. Street level. Yes, yeah. That's the term you're looking for.
Which was notionally what the new Avengers were supposed to be post-Siege, you know, but which in reality they weren't, because their first frickin' story involved them fighting Agamotto. I mean, that would be my concern, would be there's going to be... That's something Marvel now has done. We've said it before. They've done a really, really good job of making their individual books and their overloaded franchises have individual purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers is the Avengers. New Avengers is the Illuminati. Secret Avengers is the S.H.I.E.L.D. book. All New Avengers is the time-displaced old X-Men. Uncanny Avengers is Cyclops' X-Men. Wolverine and the X-Men is the school. Brian Woods' new all-female X-Men number one is, despite being sold as the all-female book, it's really the traditional X-Men book, which is something there hasn't been for a long time. Mm-hmm. And what is Mighty Avengers going to be that is going to distinguish it from the other Avengers? That is going to be important. And it's like, if it was Heroes for Hire, I wouldn't be asking this question, but they have put it out under an Avengers label, and Marvel has done a good job making it matter. So don't work backwards here, guys. Make this matter.
Yeah,
it's just my concern.
Okay, what they need
I mean, like, I don't need it to be of cosmic significance or importance.
No.
I just need them to have a clear reason for this to be creatively.
Yeah,
and I mean, the word is, I mean, supposedly this is the team of Avengers that comes together to defend the Earth. When the actual Avengers, because there is only the one team of Avengers now, are in space as part of Infinity.
Yeah, because this is starting as part of Infinity, right? Yeah. I mean,
so that's a good inciting reason for the team to come to be. But you're going to need to give them a mission statement, a purpose, a raison d'être to keep existing after the Avengers come back, and it's going to be need to be more than Luke Cage needs a book, because Bendis isn't writing it anymore, and that's no reason.
So what pictures do you think Greg Land is going to base
God. I had forgotten that you said Growth Gland was doing that. Like, we were talking about it.
Good stuff was happening.
We were talking about the promise of the book, where there could actually be some promise, and then I'd forgotten Greg Land.
Yeah. So which actor do you think Greg Land is going to base Luke Cage on?
Avery Brooks.
Terry Crews.
Terry Crews. Well, that'll be fun. I think it'll be, it's just like Iron Man all over again, where it's like the book is great and it's just like magazine covers.
I bet Rihanna gets some FaceTime as Monica Rambeau.
Wish they would put Daredevil on that team, then they could call it Hell's Kitchen's Avengers. That would be a good one.
Avengers of Hell's Kitchen.
The Avengers of Hell's Kitchen, there you go.
Oh, wow.
We'll be all like, yeah, that would be a purpose, but it would be an immensely specific purpose.
We're the defenders of the Earth, and we defend 29th Street between 85th and Broadway.
Call it Defenders. Like, is anything using Defenders now?
No.
There are a million names this could be called.
Yeah.
But it's not being called. I mean, at least it's not the Dark Avengers. I mean, it feels like it's kind of filling in the spot where the Dark Avengers were.
But I think calling it Dark Avengers would be a little.
Because Cage was. That's what Cage has been doing. Up until recently, he was in charge of the Thunderbolts program, and then the Thunderbolts comic got turned into Dark Avengers,
right.
And then Thunderbolts was Marvel nowed into Daniel Way's
thing.
Both Thunderbolts, I miss you so much.
A book
Why
that
can't
comes
you be
out.
The book it used to
so I mean, I guess in most senses, this is taking up Dark Avengers' place as Luke's book, but. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely gonna give it a look. There's enough. The writer's got a good enough rep, and there are enough good characters on there that I want to read about. I just really like that new name, Veronica. Spectrum.
Yes. Nice.
I'm kind of can't really settle with me, because now I'm thinking, in order for her to get her powers or suit up, you hear a long winding cassette tape going beep beep beep. I'm sorry, it's just what immediately pops into my head when I hear the word Spectrum.
You and I get that.
Yeah, that's not... I don't think that translates over here. I'm going to assume that's a thing.
Any Brits around the age of 30, please agree with me.
Okay.
Please.
That's terribly specific. All right. Well, that's fantastic then. So, look for magazine
Marvel,
images.
Exciting new book coming, DC. Pissing off retailers with their
own
stuff. Excellent. Well, there you go. There's your news. Thank you, Chris McFeely. So let's then switch gears and go into our top five need to read books of the week. Things that you should look at.
There should be music there. Yeah.
I know. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about trying to get some music in there. We need to get.
It needs to be something.
I gotta grab something. So, first up in our new specific order of books is Dial H, and we are dialing down in issues left. So, Chris McFeely.
Yeah, I got Dial H here.
Tell me
this
about
is an Open Window Man issue.
So good.
I mean, I'm getting to the point where I'm having trouble remembering exactly what happened. Well, the last issue of Dial H was a bit of a mess. I think we all agreed artistically. It was very hard to follow who was what and what was who and where they were and what they were doing. The art did not do any services to the last issue of Dial H. But following the events of last issue, they have escaped into another dimension, following the trail of the Operator, the mysterious being that's out to destroy all dialers and recover the dialers that they use across all the universes. And they've wound up in a land of living graffiti. And of course, they don't have any way to get out, because they used a portal that had already been opened to get there. And they've wound up in a land of living graffiti, so it's just this bombed-out wasteland of walls, ruined walls everywhere with living chalk drawings walking across them. They haven't become part of the world of living chalk, they're just standing in this bombed-out ruin.
It's so bizarre, because you have this three-dimensional world, and yet all the inhabitants of it are two-dimensional drawings on walls.
Babe, the walls!
It's so weird!
I don't know!
But I love it!
Up. It's great because all the speech bubbles from the little child, they can interact with them. Well, they not no, only open window man. No, no, that's not right. They can.
Yeah, they can.
They can all interact. Yes, they can interact with the chalk drawings, but all of their speech bubbles are drawn on the walls as chalk as well.
Well, and they're fucked too, because the whole problem is that normally when they go to another place, they just get a dial from there, and that's what they use to like dial out to the next universe. And they know where the dial is, they can see it, but it's a chalk drawing.
Yeah.
So they can't get it. And that's what's so trippy about this issue, is it's there's so much like almost anxiety within it, you know, because they, you know, they really, and the chalk people want to give them the dial, and they want the dial, and they can't fucking get it.
Well, I like that you call this the chalk people. I haven't read this, but that just chalk.
Yeah, there's not a lot we can really say because, the story starts with a little chalk boy and his little chalk parents leaving a little chalk theater, and then a gunman emerging around a little chalk pointer and shooting the little chalk parents with the little chalk gun.
Oh,
leaving the little chalk orphan.
Yeah.
Do I also see a sequence where that chalk orphan is like training and fighting his way through life?
Kind of
chalk training.
Yeah.
We can't. Let me just say that you think you know where it's going.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't go there. It
doesn't go there. The issue is a good issue, but it really crystallizes into fantasticness in like what, the last four or five pages.
Yeah. Solid. I mean, the end of this book is just, it's kind of almost, there's parts of it that are really hard. I mean, it's like let's not, you know, beat around the bush. You're thinking Batman, obviously, about kid, and you know, and it just starts to go in a place that you don't think it's going to go. And
I mean, it's not that it's a sad ending.
No, but it's
because the dial is recovered. They're able to leave. The child will live, and he won't be a miserable man consumed with vengeance. It's not sad, and yet somehow. It's not happy either.
It's very.
There's a little chalk scar on open window man's heart that can't be wiped away the way a chalk drawing on a wall can.
And you've just got to, if nothing else, you have got to read this issue just for the realization of, you know, who open window man is for his universe.
Yeah,
like that is,
and how he uses his power.
And yes, man,
so good.
That was so great. I mean, so anyway,
and I was like, "What is he doing? I don't know what." Holy shit!
Yeah, he did it. So definitely check that out. Dial H, first need to read on the list. So second,
just before we wrap up on it as well, this one does at least properly manage to introduce us to the other members of this cast.
Yeah.
What made last issue such a maelstrom?
Yeah,
like pretty sure these should have come last issue, so that could have been very readable. And there are so many dials as well: a G dial,
the
for
G dial
up gear, and the
other one. There was another one that's like it was a different kind of H dial, wasn't it? The one that was they talked about the dials that actually stole powers being broken, like that's not how they're supposed to work.
Yeah.
And then there's one that just like continually random dials.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
which one is that? That's which one is that one?
I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, that's Dwan's.
Yeah, Dwan's dial.
Dialer without a name, Dwan. An auto dialer so jammed you forget what you once were as you stutter through identities. Great. Oh,
awesome.
A dial that can dial up gear. The dial they're trying to get from the chalk people is called the J dial, which is the dial that the operator uses to jump. J for jump.
Yeah.
Through realities.
Okay, I've never read an issue of Dial H, and I'm like kicking myself for
you
it.
Are. You should be.
I forgot you don't read Dial H.
Let me finish. Okay, I was thinking about getting a trade and everything, and now that it is in, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll do that, and then I can read the whole thing. But everything you just said sounds so creative, so original, so out there. why isn't it like the number one best-selling DC book? Why is this not one of
the
books?
I think because it doesn't have Batman in it. It doesn't have Superman in it. But that's the thing is, like, DC is not... I mean, it's a combination where it's like DC's not doing a heavy promotion on stuff that isn't their mainline books. And I think that people are afraid of buying things that are, you know... The thing is like, I think if this was an Image book... Mm-hmm. I think it would be doing really well.
Yeah, but it would be like Saga sales or something if it was an Image book. I bet
if it could just have been a Vertigo book.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like it was clearly supposed to be.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think then that would be a whole different ballgame.
Chris literally just stated the point I was going to make, and I was thinking about this leading up to this broadcast. In fact, DC have really, really shot themselves in the foot with this whole idea that most of their input should be mainline, not continuity, but mainline comic book stories. Because, case in point, things like Stormwatch. The whole point of Stormwatch wasn't so much the fact that, hey, these guys could mingle with the DC characters at any time. No, the whole point was that it was an alternative to the comics that you were reading at the time. Same with stuff like Swamp Thing. Same with most of the characters from Justice League Dark, like Constantine. Mm-hmm. Now the fact that you've got no choice and they're stitched in along with everybody else, it kind of pushes away the readership that were originally there to start off with.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, alienates the people that are going into this at the same time. So I think DC, in a marketing point of view, I think this has been a bad idea from day one. So things like Dial H, if this was like 3 years ago, this would be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But because it's not marketed, it's not geared towards any kind of readership from that particular kind of demographic, it's ignored. Mm. I wouldn't
this would
say
be the book everybody was talking about if it had come out under the Vertigo line.
Totally. Well-written, damn good characters that I give two craps about. Art is there. The cover book art is fantastic. You know, everything about it screams, buy me, read me, absorb everything about me. But again, DC have not exactly gone out of their ways to say, this is the thing to buy. So
you
would
still have
thought that it would be doing bookstore sales, though, with Mieville's name on the cover.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's sort of an anomaly for me. Like, this book should be doing better than it was. You know,
I mean, it's not like DC's canceling a successful book or anything.
No, I mean they're not. But it just like
buttons, you know.
Get trades, Triplett. What's wrong with you?
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Get trades.
I have.
Are the trades out?
Their first trade is out. Yeah.
First trade is out. I read all of it a few weeks ago.
Okay, so number two on our must-read books of the week is a short hit because it's something that I actually picked up just on a whim, which is the all-new X-Men. I've not been reading this at all, so I was not really privy to that. The reason I got it is because it crosses over with my Uncanny Avengers. And I won't spend a lot of time on it. There's some really interesting things. One, how Jean Grey reacts to Wanda is fun. and it's like you accidentally...
Imagine she goes batshit crazy or something.
Let's imagine that you accidentally read the mind of someone who has wiped out all the mutants. You might not be too thrilled about that. But there's great interaction here between Havoc and this young Scott. Of course, Scott at this time still thinks, you know, that Havoc's dead. So it's a nice little interaction there.
Because they pulled them from a point where he's not met him again.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That was really interesting to see how that works out. And really, the other big thing is Fing Fang Foom. So there you go. So that's all I'll say. But you really ought to check it out. It's a great one shot. It's an easy book to read, you know, just once. You really don't need anything else for it. I haven't been reading all new X-Men, and it doesn't cross over in any significant way with Uncanny Avengers. So it's not like it really just has the Uncanny Avengers team there. So it's fine to just do that. But more importantly, number three on our must-read books of the week is something we talked about last month when it came out, and this is the second issue that we said would be kind of pivotal for this book, which is The Movement.
Yes.
And we said, you know, it's going to hinge on this second issue, and boy, did it hinge on it and really work.
Oh, it pulled it off spectacularly.
There are so many things going on in this book. There's a lot of subtext, but as well as just damned interesting things. We did get to see this wheelchaired girl who only went by the name Vengeance Moth. We don't know her.
Vengeance Moth.
Vengeance Moth.
What is that? I don't know.
No idea.
I imagine she turns into a giant moth, but when she turns back into a human, she gets back into a wheelchair or something. I don't know. There could be something crazy going on there.
Yeah. I absolutely love the rat character guy. What is his name again?
Mouse.
Yeah. Mouse. The whole scene with he loses not to spoil too much.
One of his rats dies. And then, like, he's really freaking out about it because he's very close to these creatures, obviously. I loved Mr. Trouncer, and he shouldn't be dead.
Yeah.
I kind of really want to sort of eat him.
Yes. This is the Gail Simone I missed.
I mean, that honestly was the moment in the book where I went, oh, this is Secret Six territory. This is where we are. Yeah,
this is good stuff, but we get
messed up characters like that. Yeah.
Some of the things that we talked about that we were afraid of from the last issue, I think, get answers, and I won't go into all of what those answers are. But you know, we were concerned about how can this stand as a 1% book, you know, in terms of, you know, focusing on the downtrodden. We ask questions about, you know, what is the real deal with this, you know, Forsaken, or what is his name again?
Burden,
yeah, with Burden, yeah. You know, is he just crazy? I think that question gets answered. We get
I don't know. Crazy seems not unfair. Like, I mean, he legitimately believes he is possessed because his parents have beat this idea into him.
Yeah, but I think we get a better answer to that question in this issue, at least somewhat.
Well, yeah.
And a bit of a twist as well, which I was not expecting at all. So,
with catharsis or
yes. Yeah. So that was like, what? Shut up.
I don't want to spoil it, but the character at the end, is that who I think that is?
It is who you think it is. I knew as
that was out of left
for the issue, and they were talking about they had to go and see the witch, the weather witch, and I'm like, well, they're not saving this up to the last page reveal without this being somebody I'll recognize.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it took me a second, obviously, because this is exactly what we were just talking about.
I used to buy that book, but yeah, I was like, I don't know. I don't want to say anything, but it's one of those things that DC did with New 52 that I don't care for when they mix this with this.
It's exactly what we were just talking about. It is somebody from another property that's since been folded in. But don't forget, Gail Simone used to write that book.
Yeah.
Did she? I never read it when she
did used to write that book. Oh, so that's good. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Look forward to that.
All right.
Virtues.
You know, I think there's a virtue. Yeah, I was going to say, I was about to bring up the virtue moment.
Oh, man. That was like, you know how like the last issue were like, is this all she can do? Is she just follow around stuff? And it was like, oh, no, no.
No. Giant, scary red for rage.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask for that. That it really was the Mouse and Trouncer stuff that solidified the book for me as being the Gail Simone from Secret Six that I really want to read about, though, and has definitely convinced me that I am in this for at least a couple more issues.
Yeah, it's exactly. I would say it's definitely kept me on board for a little bit. The things that happened in this issue, I felt like answered a lot of the questions, like I said, that we had about whether or not this book would have staying power, and I think it does, at least for a little bit, you know.
Basically, the first issue was the police captain seeing the characters from outside in. So while we did get to see were the very broad strokes of the characters and the personas they put forward, and this issue offers us, the audience, a look at the characters themselves, like outside of the public eye, and we get
we get a little more of a feel for them and what is not their public showy personas that they put on. And we find out that, you know, some of these characters, their public persona is who they are. Catharsis, that really Catharsis, is.
Yeah.
She's just big and angry, and Mouse is as crazy and Prince of Ratsy as he thinks, but we see the flip side of that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we see Virtue, who seems very nice and pleasant and good and wonderful and lovely and everything, go all rage monster.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that there were a lot of internal discussions between the group members that sort of...
I mean, they clearly have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that.
Smashed this together in the most haphazard way possible, and they really don't quite know where. It's like, yeah, you know, we'll take these cops. Yeah, the bat. You know, that we can't. We'll take them prisoner. Now what?
Oh, Now that, yeah, it's great. Yeah. So there's internal conflict as well. I mean, it's just it's good stuff. So
can I say I really like the art too?
Oh
yes,
you can. Yeah. You can freely say that, sir.
Yeah, because that's when I opened this issue, I was like, man, the art's just jumping out at you, and I don't know how to describe it, but it's like it's gritty. Mm-hmm. I don't know how super super gritty, but it's like it's grittier than like most DC books that I'm getting right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of heavy pencil work almost that's translating into some of the inks. I think
grimy blacks.
Yeah,
it's kind of stylized. You know, it's a little. I don't say cartoonish, but you kind of know what I mean.
It does kind of have some big heads,
little,
some odd proportions.
Bulgy. Yeah. The proportions are a little, but it's very, I mean, like, we get the cop that Catharsis beat up last issue, and Sloth from the Goonies would not be in it. Like, you know, he has been pummeled beyond all resemblance to a human being here.
Yeah. Even, like, the missing the front teeth and just, like, wobbly face all over the place. Yeah.
I mean, the art was good in the first issue too, but he's not doing anything different this issue. I don't know if it's just
I think it stands out more in this issue.
Yeah,
maybe it's just some reason. He's coming into his own, I guess, with the characters and with the world and everything. Mm-hmm.
And that didn't take long, so that really bodes well for the book and
the
way the creators are into it. You know, so probably canceled in 8 issues then. Thanks, DC. Mm.
Way to go.
No, sorry, no, we're
God,
not doing that.
No, please, no. Can we have something that will last? So,
if you enjoyed Secret Six, if you missed that, you know,
if you like kind of morbid,
you're
Gil
probably
Simone,
checking
yeah.
this out already. If you were a Secret Six fan, because if you were a Secret Six fan, odds are you were a Gil Simone fan. But if you're not, you really ought to be, because this seems like it's that Gil Simone. Really fast.
Yeah, I think I'm going to add it to my pull list.
You
I was
should.
Reading the first two, I was trying to decide, but after reading this one, I think I'm going to do it.
Yep. All right, so number 4 on our list of your top 5 books that you need to read, if you haven't done so, is going to be Superior Spider-Man, Chris Triplett. What's going on? Why do we got to read this, buddy?
Because it's Superior Spider-Man.
Well, there is that.
Ben Slott wrote it.
I'm sold.
All right, next.
All right. And you're done.
That's like why you're going to read, like, every issue, but specifically this issue, because we're pulling up old wounds. We're going back to Jameson's wife being murdered and kind of burning that back up. And, they're going to execute Alistair Smythe, and this is just like this touches everybody in this issue. And like if Peter was still around, it would he would be another character that it would be hurting. But like it's just a big kind of an issue that I just like that they're going back to that, and that he's there but he's not there. You know, it's Doc Ock that's in his place, and like if Peter was there, the whole issue would have been like, oh, God, this, I failed, and this is like me. Staring failure in the face and everything, and Otto's like, just kill him. Just kill him. Get it over with.
Well, and I think that's what's so interesting about this book is that I think that the perspective. You're absolutely right in the sense that this is a book where if it was Peter, the perspective on this issue would have been completely different.
Yeah.
You know, the point of view on it. But instead, because it's Doc Ock, he's far more focused on the place. Than he is the event, because he has no connection to the reason that they're there. He only has a connection to the place.
Yeah.
And we see, in some ways, I think we see a very vulnerable Doc Ock in this issue.
Yeah, I love that one moment he had with Nora.
That is a fantastic
moment. That's like the best. That's the best of.
Yeah, and it's just something you have to see. I want to save that in particular. Yeah. It's like, if for nothing else, those three panels are just. I think they solidify a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes in Doc's head. You know, as he's living this odd life, and there is a lot of regret, I would say.
Yeah,
I think on Doc Ock's part, where it's like he's such a planner and he's so meticulous and he did so much work to get to this point, and now he's in some ways maybe questioning the intelligence of it. But I like his response to that. Like, I like the way that he personally recommits himself, you know, to being who he is.
And another thing I liked was the sort of the moment where, you know, like how there's always the story. It's like, you know, the villains only really exist because the hero exists, because the hero is the reason these crazy people come out and do these crazy things. Okay, so if the hero becomes crazier, will the villains become crazier, you know, to kind of offset him? Mm. And, you know, you've got these guys that Otto has really screwed up, you know. And
I mean, these are all guys that Otto has messed up personally in the course of this run.
Yeah,
and I love that.
These guys who happen to be here. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that too, man. Because these guys are bad messed up. They like talk about all the problems that it's like, oh, this one guy, he can't even eat without a tube because of what Spider-Man did to him.
Yeah,
and I just love that about it too. I mean, it's as far as like, you know, oh God, you know, this isn't like, you know, Ends of the Earth or, you know, Spider Island or whatever. But yeah, it's a great issue. I mean, it was a really good issue.
I mean, as much as there's really very little punchings in it as well. This is this is actually intellect versus intellect. It's what we've seen a lot of from Otto in the course of this, in this comparatively short amount of time, is he does plan ahead. He has all the possible escapes. Smythe has spent all this time in the prison formulating all the ways to escape from it, and Otto has already done that and has actually guarded all of them off as well. And I'm like, if Peter was here, Smythe would probably be gone.
He would have been long gone.
Oh yeah.
He'd have been long gone and home and ordered a pizza.
planning time, revenge.
Like, yeah.
And then at the same time, though, so Otto's stops him from getting away, but then at the same time, like, if he'd got away, then what happens to these villains at the end of the comic wouldn't have happened to them.
Yeah, it's interesting because it creates a completely different consequence, you know, in the sense that Peter, and Otto even says it in this issue, you know, Peter was reactionary, Otto is proactive.
Yeah.
And, you know, Otto has, that has been a strength for Otto, and I would say up to this point. And this is going to be the point where being so over cautious and so overly careful is probably going to bite him in the ass pretty hard.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the issue, and it might be the next issue, but I'm waiting for the issue where, like, so yeah, he's become a superior Spider-Man, so like, now here is the superior Spider-Man villain, or here's the superior Spider-Man foe.
Yes, and that is kind of the missing element, isn't it? It's like, we really, now that he is like almost there, like he's at that point of being this, you know, the truly solidified best, you know, Spider-Man he could be, or at least superior in that sense. I do feel like we are on the cusp of that superior villain. And I think that, you know, at least the indication from other books may be that maybe that is going to be whoever this new Goblin is, or, you know, whether it's, you know, Osborn or not, maybe that is going to be the case. We've talked about that being a pretty big showdown, and maybe that is what Slott is building up to.
He's the superior Spider-Man villain.
So, awesome. So definitely this is a good issue. This is a thought-provoking issue more so than some of the more action issues.
It's very unassuming.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't go into it expecting all these thoughts to be kicked up by it.
Yep.
Because it's like Otto has no real connection to what is going on. You know, like, well, where is this even going to go? You know, he's just going to punch him and stuff. And then it's like, oh, wait, hang on. No, there's a whole dark mirror being held up here.
Yep. Yeah. So good stuff. Good stuff. Okay. Finally, on our list of top five books that you need to read this week is something that I have and haven't got to read the first issue of it. So I've got to get caught up on it. But Matt is going to tell us about East of West, which is something we talked about the first issue. But we haven't talked about since then. So
did I talk about issue 2 when it came out?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
If you did, I wasn't here. We may have missed a week that week, too.
I don't know. I can't remember.
So,
yeah. Well, this is more to do with issue 3, which I'll try and keep spoilers to a minimum, because obviously JD hasn't
We want you to sell it, sir, so sell it to our
so
listeners.
So this is probably going to be more of a selling of the series in general, because we're only 3 issues in, and more to the point, it's not DC, it's not Marvel, it's a company that I'm very, very surprised that I'm actually reading a comic book from, and it's an Image comic. So East of West, to basically give you a setting, it's one of those distant futures, but not too distant. It's around the time of the year 2060-something, in an alternate timeline, so which things have gotten a little bit astray, to say the least. Amongst all of this, it's got a strange blend of futuristic, but also a little bit of hints of the past as well. Our main characters are essentially the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So you've got war, famine, and pestilence as basically your villains. And then your hero, not, I will state.
Sort of an anti-hero.
Is death. Now the thing is that the four of them have been separated out. All of them are on the Earth. Hell is coming on Earth. The end of days are coming. But Death can't join the other three, because Death has a shit list. And Death is not going to do anything until he gets all of the things and people on his shit list done.
Is that how Gruffy described it to you?
Pretty much.
That's how I described it to him. So,
yeah.
Man, nice. I wouldn't want to be on Death's shit list.
There is no way of describing it. You read the comic and you will pretty much state, yeah, Death is pissed. Death is pissed. Lots of things have pissed him off and he's going to deal with it. Now, the strange thing about the characters in this is that each of the four members of the apocalypse are basically, from clothes to skin tone to everything, are all a unique color. Death is white, and then the others are purple, red, and I forget what the other one's color is. I need to double check that.
Famine? Which one is which? I can't remember which one the skeleton is. If the skeleton is famine, she seems to be
I think skeleton is famine.
And then war is red, and conquest is blue. Yeah, because there's no pestilence, it's blue.
Yeah.
I actually didn't notice that until this issue.
Now, all of this is building up towards basically Doomsday. And the other thing that, if we were inhabitants of this alternate timeline, we'd be very concerned, because most of the world's leaders are basically a cult. They're all about the message, and all of them are decidedly dodgy. But what happens, and it's slightly spoilish for the second issue if anyone's read it, basically, one of the leaders of the world, Pestilence, War, and Famine, basically went to each candidate because that particular leader in the first issue gets bumped off. So all these people are turning up to take his place. Now, these three guys literally kill every person that's a potential for the leadership until they reach somebody who is suitably in the dark side. So they can then slot that person in amongst their little cultish gang of people that have full power of the Earth. Yeah. We're screwed. We are totally and utterly screwed.
Sounds great.
But the characterizations of all of these characters, regardless of whether they're on the side of good, very rarely are they on the side of good, or bad, very well written. Very well written. You can actually get pulled into this world. You don't want to live in it, You really don't want to live in it. But
this is a Hickman, right? This is a joint. Awesome.
Yeah.
A man, I may say, who did the impossible a few years ago and actually got me reading Fantastic Four. I've not been much of a Reed Richards fan for a considerably long time, and I'm still not a Reed Richards fan. But Jonathan Hickman made me like to hate him. And through that, I actually read the run. So this guy I know is damn good at writing comic books. Hopefully he's good at reading them as well. there's not much else I can really state. Now, the main thing about issue 3, it's more of a side story. It's not a side
Death
step.
Isn't
it's
really
a
in this
side
one.
Story. Death okay. is there's about two panels with Death in. This is all about Death's wife, who is a human in the Orient.
No, she's not in the Orient. She's Chinese, but she's... Because one of the features of this timeline is that... Yeah. What is San Francisco is in this timeline... what's the friggin' name of it? I can't remember.
Things have all swapped around, anyway.
New Shanghai. Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
And the German Mao was exiled and took root here, and now his descendants rule New Shanghai.
Yeah, basically, in this timeline, everybody's invaded each other, so basically everybody's migrated to other parts of the Earth. So it's very, very... it's very, very screwed up. So, having said that, if you're going into issue 3, for God's sake, don't. Go into issue 1 and read it through, because issue 3, I think, is a breather from the main narrative, but still introduces you to all these other characters.
Reacting to what Death is doing, mainly.
Exactly. That is basically East of West. Definitely worth a read. It's a darn good read. It's not a particularly wordy book, but one thing I will point out, there's a sentient eyeball that lives in the socket of a barman. Come on.
What?
This is the barman who appeared in the first issue, if you remember my summary of that one, who Death threatened to get the information he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that he had a big eye patch, and there was like a rather large eyeball on there that bugged out whenever he realized who Death was, and that was all we got. I didn't think there was anything more to it. But in this one, you know, the other three horsemen come to the bar, and they followed Death's trail there. They've sensed him to there. I mean, he was there, wasn't he? Who was there? I'm not talking to you. And then he suddenly, his eyeball flies out of his head. And I thought maybe they'd enchanted his eye, you know, because his eye would have seen Death. And I thought maybe they'd enchanted it to find out directly from it. But no, it's some kind of little living eyeball thing that just lives in his hell. It speaks in rhyme. And I really, the eyeball splurts out of his head, lands on the bar, and War leads in and goes, "Well?" And then the eyeball goes, "Yes, yes, much to fear. Mr. Bones was rattling here."
Oh, my God.
War asks him, "What did he want?"
"Don't know. Undiscovered. Tracker dummy, keep me covered. Covered up. Can't see. Ain't knowing what came to be."
Nice.
Oh, well, there you go.
And he grabs, stuffs it back into his skull.
Okay, so I'm sold. I gotta go get that first issue downloaded. My shop hasn't been able to get the first issue. I can't get the first issue reprint, so I'm gonna have to download it.
I feel like it might be up to its third printing at this stage.
Yeah, and I have still not been able to get it. So,
but again, this is Image. People.
Well, I mean, Image has been good lately. I mean, Image is not your older brother's Image, you know. Image is like good stuff, you know.
It's
now
changed a lot.
Yeah,
we've said it a little over the last. Well, it really was like in 2012. I think we concluded, didn't we, at the end of your show? Like, really, they should deserve publisher of the year. I mean, they have really shaken off their old reputation from things.
They're taking chances, and the chances are paying out. I mean, that's really what it is.
I mean. As Marvel solidifies its books into a few core brand families and doesn't really seem too willing to take big chances outside of those, even though they're putting good creators on them, and as DC tries to keep editorial control of everything that's going on in their universe to the detriment of many of their creators, Image is the one who's going around. And with the increase on superhero movies and the more and the increasingly more public amounts of litigation that's surrounding the rights of characters, Image is the ones who are going around scooping up the creators with the original ideas and offering and giving them great deals on their rights and everything. They'll own all their creator stuff. We said it last year, and it's as true now as it was then. Even the relaunch of Rob Liefeld's Maximum Studios stuff, from Glory to Profit to all the other things that they've relaunched, have all been very well. Profit, as I understand,
Profit's actually doing really well, isn't it?
I really want to check that out, because I've heard so much good stuff about Profit, but I know nothing about it. They really were.
I think the first issue of Profit is free on Comixology if you actually wanted to try it.
I think it is
because I think I have it, actually. I just haven't read it yet.
Mm. A lot of good things about it. I don't even know what it's actually about. I just keep hearing good things about it.
Yeah. Awesome. So Image gets good stuff. So there you go. Final number 5, East of West. Check that out. That being said, I think we will take a break. We will have a message from our sponsor. Yes, you heard that right. And we will be right back. Greetings, listeners. Now, we know you love comic books, but we're going to assume that you probably like regular books, too. But if you're like me, you don't always have all the time you need to read those books. Well, Audible is the answer. Audible is a way to download audio versions of books, and then you can listen to them when you're on the go, at the gym, driving your car. Okay, you're probably not at the gym. Okay, but you should be at the gym. And if you're at the gym, you can listen to a book while you're running or walking or doing whatever, as well as driving, whatever it may be. Audible allows you to take an audiobook with you wherever you want to go. How do you get it? Well, you go to audibletrial.com/TFradio. You're going to get a 30-day free trial. This is only available to those of you who listen to this show. So if you go to audibletrial.com/TFradio, you're going to get a 30-day free trial to Audible. That's going to give you access to free book downloads, as well as options of downloading tens of thousands of books that are available in their audio listening library. Some excellent books are available there. I've read a few of them through that. Of course, you're listening to it. You get great, sometimes actors or even the author themselves are reading the books. So it's really a great opportunity to get caught up on books, especially when time is an issue, or maybe you just don't like to sit there and read. Maybe you want to listen to the book, just like you listen to this show every week. Go to www.audibletrial.com/TFradio today. Get started on your 30-day free trial at Audible. So we're back, and it is time for yet another segment on this show. This segment we are calling The Replacements. This is a segment where we talk about an old book getting a new creative team. And first up for this is going to be Green Lantern. So we talked about Green Lantern getting... of course, John's having been on the book for so long and leaving. So now we have Robert Venditti?
Venditti? Maybe.
Taking over the writing and pencils by Billy Tan. So, what do you think?
Well, I skimmed that book. Not sure there was a green and... rings were involved, and
it sure is the next issue of the comic.
It is. I mean, and like I said, I did not read the previous issue, so it doesn't do necessarily a bad job of sort of kind of cluing you in. I wouldn't say it tells you what's going on, but I would say it definitely clues you in. You know, I kind of get, oh, okay, these are the Guardians that's going to replace those whacked out, you know, evil guys that were the Guardians before. And, hey, look, somebody cares about Kyle. And,
he was so out of place in that issue. Right? It's like everybody else looks like they're in the Green Lantern Corps, and here he is in his white suit and his funky looking mask. And I'm like, what are you even doing?
I don't even know how he sees out of that. I'm just. But the little Guardians are great, because, like, the one, like, shoots off a gun. He's like, oh, wow! That was great!
So, like, that needs to be like the thing that happens every issue, so, just so you can point it out. Oh, wow, somebody's trying to shoot and kill Kyle.
I mean, good on him. I mean, if his aim was just a little bit better, I think he would have got him. But, but I don't know. It's very much, you know, I think my first big eye roll of this issue was the conversation between Hal and Carol, where it's sort of like, okay, here we go. This is...
Yeah.
Let's reestablish the rocky relationship between Hal and Carol, just in case, you know. And
I especially love, like, you know, I might have been okay with it if they would have done that, but I especially love that they're like, it's like, but I thought we patched everything up. I was like, yeah, you were dead, and you came back, and everything was great. I was like, yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah, and, well, and even when the characters sort of have a deal where it's like, even the characters point out, like, wait a minute, we were fine, and then the other one's like, no, we're really not. And you're like, oh, well, that's because the writer is totally forcing this thing to happen. Yeah.
That's like the most painful thing in the issue, honestly.
I think so. I mean, I think the characterization of Hal is fine. I didn't have a problem with that. I especially loved the moment between him and Kilowog. Poor Kilowog. They've got
he just needs a seat that he can.
He's trying to take over the whole deal, and Hal's like, yeah, let's crack this open and get some recruits. And Kilowog's like, fucking crazy. He's like, there's nowhere for them to live. Like, the whole planet's ruined. And Hal's just like, yeah, whatevs. So it's, you know, it's good Hal. But, I mean, there's a little, I don't know, pulling out Lar Flees in your first issue, yeah. You know?
There's a, I mean, it seems like this thing is definitely intending to bring in a new big baddie pretty quickly. There's something waiting in the wings there, all right. But it's... I can't blame the guy, but
yeah.
He is damned to follow Geoff Johns' run.
Yeah,
anybody is damned. Honestly. Yeah, I mean, it's not really his fault. It's just that, hey, anybody that was coming after, sorry.
I mean, the Hal Carroll thing is a bit of a silly.
Yeah,
I know why he feels the need to bring that back. But then, you know, Lar Flees, and Lar Flees is like, you're really gonna throw that out again already? But it's not like you can actively ignore all of the important things, Geoff Johns. You can't just suddenly. It can't be a case of, right, Geoff Johns is done now. That's it. So all of his stuff is done and tied up, and I, as a writer, can now come on and do my thing for Green Lantern. But well, it just does feel like, and it's no offense to the guy or anything, but it does feel like he's not the next. Jeff, he's not the next Green Lantern writer. He's just the next Green Lantern writer.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's, I think, yeah, and that's why I say, like, I don't begrudge anybody, like, you know, taking this job, because it is big, big, big shoes to fill. And there's some interesting things, like, coming from this preview page, Mogo, you know, like, so, I mean...
JD, you need to read John's last issue is all I'm saying.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, you need to read John's last
issue. It's a good issue.
It's a good issue.
Yeah, I feel like I need that bridge to get to this. But, you know, the recruits are a little interesting in this,
yeah.
too.
We get some new recruits. There are some, you know, ideas for moving forward here, but I don't get any sense of a writer with a goal for the book yet. And... that's something that whenever any runs of new significance tend to crop up now, they are ones that are able to lay down some kind of mission statement at the very start. But, and again, really trying not to turn every discussion around to this, but it's kind of hard not to, because the fact is this probably is just something that's being written under the heavy editorial auspices of DC, where they're really dictating what can and can't happen with the book to an awkward extent.
Yeah.
And what was in particular, it's because it's a shift from one of the few books where it was truly under the writer's control to now being a book that's not going to be anywhere.
Right, and I get that. You get that feeling that it's like, well, just keep doing what Johns was doing. It's like, well, I'd like to do...
There's no new bold, sweeping moves here. Not, I mean, obviously you could never imagine... While it's not while it's certainly a tactic that many new writers who have come onto books in the past after big runs before, there's no big sweeping move to clear Jones's stuff off the table and strike out with their own stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It does feel like somebody said, right, all the stuff that he did, keep on with that, but have fun with it.
You know, I think they're in the situation where they can't move away from it, because how many Green Lantern books are there? There's a Red Lantern's book.
Four, yeah.
There's a Fleas, there's the Green Lantern Corps, there's the Guardians. I mean, you're sort of stuck with it. If there was just Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, they wouldn't have to
go. You could ignore the other spectrum.
Yeah, you could ignore it, and you could do your own thing, and then later on, Laura Fleas comes back, and we can address some stuff with him. He doesn't have to be in the first issue, but Laura Fleas has a book coming out.
Yeah, and that's
up with that?
Yeah.
Fleas book. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of argue that I think you could still. I mean, I don't think you have to like pay homage to it in Green Lantern, the spectrum. But I do see where you're saying, yeah, there's a Lar Flees book coming out, so I think there is a little editorial push to like, okay, it's almost like we talked about the first run of Iron Man in Marvel Now, where it was like, okay, you have to do an Extremis story. Why? Well, because that's in the movie, and we need a trade, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So, you know, so I think there's maybe a little bit of push in this to be like, okay, we've got a Lar Flees book coming out, you're new on the book, so just throw Lar Flees in there. What's he going to do? We don't care. Yeah.
Come up with some.
The positive though that I do like is new recruits. I always love it when you get funky looking aliens and what you can do with them. Like, I just can't wait to hear about this lady with the, you know, the tentacles on her head.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
With her.
Well, I like the little bit where he's like, "Well, so and so is the one with two antennas."
And
like,
yeah, so and so is the one with the two antennas.
Like, I don't care. So there you go. I think it's worth a read. I mean, just, you know, especially if you're if you're not an average Green Lantern fan, I mean, definitely it's not worth that. But I think
stick with it, I think. And the only thing I was worried about is I want to say that, did we not talk about this? Was this not one of the books where we were like, oh, the new creative team, and they're gone in three issues?
This is the one that's not.
It's not this one.
Yeah. It's Core and Red Lantern.
Yeah.
Core and Red Lantern. Okay.
Right.
All right. Well,
So this group should be around for a little bit. I mean, there's no sense that they're going anywhere. So, it's always, I think books always do better when you know the creators are going to be there for a little bit, and that's
because you feel like you're not wasting your time. Because like if they're leaving, then you feel like, okay, what's the point?
If it's not a planned short run, correct? I mean, if someone is coming on and they're going to do three issues of a book, I'm okay with that as long as like that was the plan. But
hey,
when
you
they
know
come
what
in
you
and
should
do
with Green Lantern, which would be awesome, I think. Do what they were doing with Spider-Man a couple years back. Dan Slott's the head guy. Make a brain trust and have like a revolving creative team to kind of
with
this guy.
That sounds like a great idea for Marvel. Do you really think that is going to work in the current DC climate?
Probably not.
No.
I mean, it's basically going to be four jobbers who are having what they're going to do dictated to them by editorial anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I'm just hoping for the best, and I'm deluded for doing that.
And that's why I say, I think if you're a fan of Green Lantern and maybe you had dropped it, kind of like I did, I picked this up just to check it out. It seems like it's in good hands. I don't know if it's convinced me that it's like, okay, I need to keep reading Green Lantern. I'll keep an eye on it. I'm going to keep an eye on it. So, okay, well, it is time, gentlemen. It is time to decide what is the best book of the week. So as you know, this is the point of the show where you all are going to pitch to me, just because I'm the host, the best book of the week. Last week, 30 seconds was far too long, and I didn't put you under enough pressure. So we're going to lower it to 20 seconds this week.
I was going to say 5 seconds. I was like...
Oh, God, no. That would just be... that would just be sadistic. So we'll get my timer set here. So you will each have 20 seconds to tell me why, what book you think is the best book of the week and why. And just to be evil, we're going to start with Matt because he is the guest. And we always like our guests to go first.
Now, he knows he doesn't have to pick his book. He can pick whatever
book
you want.
Yes, yeah, I mean, and this is whatever book you think is the best book of the week. Yep. Could have been one you talked about, could have been one that we talked about, could have been something that didn't get talked about at all, although hopefully that would have been the case. But and your time starts now.
East of West, the end of the world has never looked more fun. I'm done.
Way to get in the spirit of it, Matt. Thanks so much. okay. So we have one vote for East of West. Chris McFeely, then. We will go to you next. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
So give it to us, starting now.
Oh, gotta be Dial H once again. Another issue that, after a blip last time, has definitely brought back the truly imaginative spirit in a really nice done-for-one tale with a nice twist in the end and a bittersweet ending that just sums up the whole run and everything the writer's done on the comic, the whole tone of it. Love it. So sad it's canceled.
Okay. All right. Excellent. This was like right at 20. It's like you're so good. So
it's
I'm gonna have to lower the time again next week. This is get you all under pressure. All right, Chris Triplett, you're the final one up, sir. Are you ready?
Ready.
All right, and your time starts now.
It's Movement. I only read 3 books this week, and I thought it was the best book because I'm going to start buying this book. It convinced me with this issue. Great art, great story, interesting characters. I want to see where it's going, and it's Gail Simone getting freaky. Gail Simone getting freaky with her stuff. Mm.
All right. Well, you all are across the board.
3 different votes.
3 different votes this week, so that is going to be tough.
Those are the 3 books that I would call the best 3 of the week.
I mean, those are clearly, I think there is no question that those are the best 3 books of the week. I think, though, if I was going to pick one of those books to be the best book of the week, I think I am going to have to go with Dial H.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
it probably deserves it anyway.
Just a awesome. Just a solid issue. It was Dial H done well in the sense that it was a departure from, you know, it allowed you a window into another world. So in a sense where window. See what I did there. So in a sense where this book has been so much where other worlds are peeking into ours, this was more of a peek into another world. And I really like that about the issue. I love the way that it did it. You are doing yourself a disservice if you don't get this issue. If you've passed on Dial H for some reason, do yourself that favor. Go back and get the trades and get caught back up. You know, I mean, I hate to say that just for this issue, but this issue is solid. I mean, it is absolutely solid. There are some really touching moments in it. So there it is. Dial H is the best book of the week for this week on Fanboy Versus. So I want to thank you so much for joining us. For those of you that tuned in live, we appreciate that. We had a nice little live audience this week, mostly Headmaster Don. We love Don. You can catch Don actually on the Radio Free Cybertron each week. I get to be on there with him and make fun of him live. So that's always a good time. So, Matt, you are the man. Thank you so much for coming in this week. Just as an end note, I'll say that I know that Nicole is home. She had surgery on her foot this week. So I think, you know, they're still looking at she's got a long road of rehab ahead, kids. So it's just, you know, again, we're pulling for her and hoping for her. You know, we're not pressuring her to come back on the show whenever she's comfortable to do so. So we have got a great group of people hopefully lined up to come up. And I kind of find that out before the show, so... I'm hoping, I know that one name will pull out is I know we're hoping to get Ken back on, 1 week. So that'll be cool. And then I may try and pull in some people you don't expect. So we'll see. So I'm kind of having fun with this, rotating slot on our show, but we're of course always thinking about Nicole and wishing her well and recovering. So, but again, Matt, thank you so much. And, I'll give you a second. You want to plug your stuff? What are you doing these days?
I'm doing the Nerdsphere Network. That's thenerdsphere.blogspot.com. You can find many, 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 many shows on there, but primarily I do a show called Shut Up and Watch This, which is a roundtable and commentary podcast for all that is geek, good, or ghastly in the world today. And starting since about a fortnight ago, we've got two different shows alongside that called The Commentary Roulette, in which nobody knows what they're about to watch, but I've got a nice little list for them to watch, and it all gets picked at random. Glorious, glorious random. And me and Mr. McFeely above me in the Skype chat, we did a show called Master Avengers Theater, which is looking at all the movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 1. We did Iron Man 1. I've just done The Incredible Hulk with G-Wolf V3. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we will be doing Iron Man 2. So that's going to be pretty cool.
Nice. It's a good deal. So check all that stuff out. Matt does a good job over there, so love the stuff. So, well, that is us for this week. So for myself, for Chris, and for Matt, we thank you so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
You've been watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely. Download our Android apps. Visit tfradio.net/Android or search Google Play for Radio Free Cybertron. Watch Fanboy Versus on your TV. Visit tfradio.net/TV to learn more. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net.